going on? This is Doki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win.
All right, hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye, and we have the great basketball historian Tim Gallagher on the line. Tim, great to talk to you again, brother. Hope you're doing well. How's everything going?
I'm doing well, Fred. Happy to enjoy some summertime and getting excited for the NBA draft, and there's almost too much news swirling around with the potential trades and spots in the draft for some of the top prospects, so it's a great time if you're a basketball fan.
Yeah, no doubt. A lot going on, especially a lot centered around Jimmy Butler and the Chicago Bulls, and we'll get to that shortly. But I thought we'd start a little bit. We haven't had your thoughts yet on the finals. A little bit of a finals recap. Any parting thoughts about that great, enjoyable series? Even though it was only five games, as I predicted correctly, I still enjoyed it very much, and I thought it was definitely lived up to the billing for the most part.
I thought so as well, and congratulations on your crystal ball being correct on that one. I had Golden State in six games, which so I was close, but not totally on the mark like you. And the other exciting thing, I happened to be in Dallas on business, so I got to watch game five with Jim King, who's been a guest here on the Chicago Bullseye, a former Bulls player and assistant coach, and 50 years ago played in the finals for the Warriors against Philly. So to be able to watch that game with a past NBA player that had played in a few finals, and just again coincidentally it was 50 years ago to the year that he played with the Warriors, so that was a lot of fun to see Jim. And if any of the listeners have heard him on our podcast, he's just a wonderful storyteller and a great guy, so that added a little excitement to being able to watch the game. But just a few thoughts on the finals, and the super team that was put together certainly delivered. So in a lot of ways, what did you expect? A team that, even though they came up a little bit short last year, but had the best regular season record in NBA history, and they add Kevin Durant, who's arguably a top 3 to 5 player in the league, and probably a top 25 player all time. You could make that argument to an already great team. How there was ever any doubt, really, is probably more of a question. But I think it's also a salute to LeBron's greatness that the Cavs were close. They were close or won in games 3, 4, or 5. I thought they had obviously a lost opportunity when they couldn't win game 3. And, that was a pretty pivotal situation. But I thought even in the closeout game, the Warriors couldn't seem to extend that lead. They'd get it to 6 or 8, and Cleveland would just answer almost every time. So I think that's a real credit to what the Cavs were able to do playing on the road against such a powerful Golden State team. So I think LeBron showed us again what a tremendous all-around player he is, and and Kyrie Irving did some spectacular things. So it was a wonderful series. Glad the Cavs made it mostly competitive, although 5 games sounds a little less competitive than I think the games played out to be, especially games 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, if it was his age or maybe just being tired, though. He had some notable kind of fundamental lapses, especially on the defensive end, just simple things like boxing out. I remember one particular play in game 5 with Draymond Green getting a huge tip that led to kind of like an easy basket. Game 5, and he was actually criticized, I know, a little bit during that game by the announcers, Jeff Van Gundy, at certain times. But I mean, it's hard to criticize a guy who played so fantastic overall. But I do sense a frustration with him, clearly. And we're going to get into, Griffin leaving as GM for the Cavs. Did you sense that also? I mean, I think the first thing he's going to want is Kevin Love on the way out, because he's clearly... although you had some nice moments in the playoffs, especially early on, he just doesn't seem to be a great fit for when you're playing against Golden State. And this is the second year in a row where he really hasn't made a huge difference.
Right. Well, it was notable that LeBron did appear to be human a few times in that series, where even he was out of gas or overwhelmed by the firepower of Golden State. So, And I don't know if that's so much a knock on Cleveland's talent. I think almost any team in the league would be overwhelmed by Golden State, and we've certainly seen that the last couple of seasons. But you do sense that things are a little off with the chemistry, and and I think Griffin, who we're going to talk about in a minute, that's now the former GM of the Cavs, I thought did a pretty good job of piecing together a roster with some limited resources in terms of the guys that they're already paying and who's available on the market. So to be able to pick up a Korver, Deron Williams didn't play well in the finals, but to even have a guy like that available, again, I think he was, even Deron Williams, who in his prime was almost as good as any point guard in those years, looked overwhelmed out there against Golden State. So they'll do that to you when you've got Curry, Thompson, Durant, and Draymond, among others, relentlessly coming at you. So I thought, given that landscape, Cleveland did a pretty good job from a management standpoint of getting a roster together for LeBron. But we've talked a lot about these aging guys, right? The Richard Jeffersons, Deron Williams, Channing Frye's, guys that have been around a long time, and how much mileage do they have left on them? And I think, again, seeing it, how they performed in the finals against an elite team, that the weaknesses sure showed.
Yeah, no doubt. And got to hand it to Durant. I thought he was obviously the biggest difference between this year and last, and he made the right decision. He won a title. I mean, in the long run, nobody's going to remember the how and the why. They're just going to remember that Kevin Durant has a ring, at least one of them. And he was huge. I mean, game four where he stepped in and hit that huge three when they were down two that gave him the lead. Game four, that was a huge shot. The whole series, he was absolutely fantastic. He played great. And, it helps that you're not going to get too much of a double team, and how aggressively the Cavs were, doubling on pick and roll with Steph Curry, but
right. It was game three that he where Cleveland kind of had him, last couple minutes, and out of the timeout, Durant hit that baseline jumper going to his left, which was a key basket to bring them back to within one, I believe it was, and then when he came down in transition and pulled up and hit that three on LeBron, which really was the game right there. He did it all, right, in terms of handling the ball in the open court, defending, and just, I don't think he's ever been a big ego type guy, but just how seamlessly he really was able to fit in with the other personalities and stars at Golden State. Mm-hmm. I didn't really doubt that that would happen, but just to see how seamlessly it happened was somewhat surprising.
No, agreed. But, I mean, what a team. You can just look at them, and they're really in a position now. I was kind of stating, I was talking to a few friends, the only way I can actually see them not winning the next 3 or 4 years is major injuries to multiple players. Even they could probably withstand one injury to the big four, and or a change in the rules. And if you go back to how the game was played, I did notice this looking at the Bulls, who won in 1998. They had the only two times, I think only two games in the series that a team scored more than 90 points. In this finals, in almost every game in that Bulls series against Utah was in the 80s. In this finals, there was only one team that scored below 100 once, and that was the Cavs. It's just amazing how much more important and imperative it is to score, but a lot of that has to do with, removing the hand check as an option, and a less physical style of basketball. Simple rule change could probably fix that.
Right. And then the emphasis on shooting three-pointers is, a little different than, although the Bulls had some three-point shooters on those teams, it wasn't the focal point of their offense and, like it is now. But, right, the halftime scores for the finals, I was doing a double take because, it's in the 70s and 60s at halftime, right, which obviously it's a more offense-oriented game and not the physicality on defense, even though it was a physical series, but it didn't seem to affect the scoring that was being put up.
Yeah, no doubt. I just think that hand check rule just makes all the difference in the world. There's such a focus on three-pointers because you drive and kick, you open up lanes, and if you're able to really show hard on a three-pointer and when he tries to get by you and you're allowed to hand check, that's going to stop a lot of that. And I think it would have a very detrimental effect on especially Curry and Durant, who aren't built really well, aren't really strong. And, you know, just looking at the games in the 80s and 90s, I occasionally go back, you really notice that there was a lot more pushing, a lot more hand checks. It was just a lot more physical game. And, you know, that's why State, just a rule change would help that, but I don't think it's going to happen, and they're going to continue to dominate for years to come.
Well, the popularity of the game and the high scoring and the three-point shooting, that people love it, right? It's, you know, the game's as popular as it's ever been, and so I can't imagine the league doing anything to kind of slow down what seems to draw a lot of people to it. And I, you know, I'm certainly a proponent of it, too. I like seeing a more wide-open, free-flowing game with the emphasis on spacing and outside shooting. Yeah, I don't think it's broken, but we'll see how things go and if Golden State can continue this dominance.
Yeah, so a couple things that happened after. First, again, congrats to the Golden State, and you probably see many more for them to come, especially in the immediate few years. But the logo leaves Golden State for the Clippers. Jerry West leaves shortly thereafter. Apparently, you know, money was the issue, I guess, from what I've heard on the podcast I listened to. What's your opinion of that move, and how do you think that's going to affect the Los Angeles Clippers?
Right, well, and I think it will affect the Golden State Warriors somewhat, even though Golden State obviously has a great infrastructure in place, and it's not just Jerry West, but as we've talked about also on podcasts over the last few years, you and I have talked about it, and I've always held Jerry West in special regard, that it's not a coincidence that pretty much everywhere he goes, things turn to gold. And so he's a very understated person and deflects a lot of the recognition. And again, it's not just him, but it's not a coincidence that this level of excellence, these last three seasons, no team in NBA history has had this kind of success over 3 years that Golden State had in terms of, you know, regular season record and, you know, two out of three championships. And so Jerry West is such a mastermind and talent evaluator. And so I don't know what prompted the move. I don't think that's really been publicly stated. My guess is he likes a challenge, and where else can Golden State go, right? They're on the top of the mountain and look like they're going to stay there for a while. So, you know, certainly the fact that he has his primary residence in L.A., it's a little easier commute than he gets to stay in Los Angeles, and looks like all the bridges that he'd had with the Lakers, which, you know, used to joke that he bled purple and gold, but I guess not anymore. And, you know, in the Clippers, although in the last few years, once Donald Sterling was out as owner and they brought in Ballmer, and, you know, Doc Rivers is obviously a very competent coach, and with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, there have been, you know, a lot of good times, especially relative to the history of the franchise, but still overall, people don't take the Clippers that seriously. They're still second place to the Lakers in the L.A. market for sure, and by a much wider margin than I think that most people outside of Southern California even realize, despite their success and how bad the Lakers have been the last few years. It's still a Laker town. So I'm thinking that Jerry just saw all those obstacles as a challenge that he'd like to overcome, and if anybody can fix it, it may not happen instantly, but I would say he's the guy.
Hey, so Tim, while we're recording this, there's some breaking news, so we should probably talk about this. Number one, the Bulls. Dwayne Wade informs team he's picking up his $24 million option for next season, so Dwayne's going to be back. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we've talked about Wade most recently when we gave our end-of-season grades, and I think both of us were very pleased with the overall impact that Wade had on the team and his individual performance. You know, the 18 points a game, 4.5 rebounds, almost 4 assists a game, played in 60 games. So I think having him, no matter which direction things go, and obviously we don't know what's going to happen with Jimmy Butler, but, you know, if they keep Jimmy and keep building, you know, we've talked about if Rondo would have been healthy, things might have gone a lot differently with Boston, and who knows if Boston would have survived that series against the Bulls. My hunch is they wouldn't have. If there is a trade with Jimmy and they bring in some young young players, either early in their career, rising stars, or lottery pick level talent that they're going to get through trade, who better than Dwayne Wade to be a mentor for a young player on his way up, be that a, you know, De'Aaron Fox or a Jason Tatum or Josh Jackson or whoever, you know, might be in that slot where the Bulls might pick if they do make a trade with Jimmy. If they keep Jimmy, and, you know, we've talked about this, and you know, my feeling is, I know Jimmy's not going to be able to play forever. He's only got a couple more years left on this contract, but the player that they would draft if they got rid of Jimmy, you know, it'll be a long shot that they'll have the level of success that Jimmy has achieved in the league. And certainly not in the short term. So either way, I'm happy with having Wade part of it. I think he was a good asset to the franchise last year for a lot of reasons, and I think that gives me a good feeling about the Bulls front office and Coach Hoiberg that, you know, if things were really as dysfunctional as a lot of the haters think, I don't think Dwayne would be sticking around, even though Chicago's his hometown.
Agree 100%. And I know you and I are going to be the only two guys who are going to be positive about this. I do feel, even if you do trade Jimmy, you need to have a guy like Dwayne Wade around, you know, to help. It's not a good situation where you got nothing but young guys and no veterans who can take somebody under their wing, you know. So, and even if they come back next year with Dwayne and they come back with Rondo and they come back with Jimmy, I know that will be the biggest, you know, sigh in the entire fan base. Oh, great, you know, bring back the same thing. I still think you get one of those young guys, if it's Portis, if it's Valentine, you just need one guy to make a jump and really become take that next step like Otto Porter did. And suddenly you're cooking with gas and you got a team that can challenge. I don't think, I know I'm in the minority in this, I think there's a kind of warped view of the Cavs' dominance of the East. I think it's far, really overstated. They beat Indiana in a very competitive series, but then they played a Toronto team, went out Kyle Lowry, who's, you know, arguably their best player, along with DeRozan. And then they played the Celtics, basically with Isaiah Thomas hobbled. It's not like they were playing hobbled teams. It's not like they did great and they ran right through the East. But I don't think it was an accurate depiction of the teams they played, that, you know, the delta between them and everyone else isn't as big as we think.
Right. Well, and even before we got through the Eastern Conference results in the playoffs, as we were previewing the playoffs, and before we knew the Bulls were going to win the first two with that healthy Rondo, we commented that Boston was the weakest number one seed we'd seen in a long time. So, and again, it remains to be seen what kind of moves Boston's going to make as well. But I agree. And back to the if Butler is traded and the Bulls do go young, I'm totally on board with having a player like Wade around, because you look at teams that have been stockpiling young talent, and I'm using talent a little bit loosely, but like a Minnesota or an Orlando, where you don't have a player of Wade's credentials and experience and professionalism there to kind of see those guys through. Those teams have been limping along for years, right? But,
yeah.
They draft or trade for a Wiggins or a Karl Anthony Towns, or they get Chris Dunn, or in Orlando, they get Drew Gordon or Elfrid Payton, and the record never changes year in and year out, right? Even with different coaches, and I've got some confidence in the Bulls front office that, you know, they have a plan and a formula. Now there may be a fork in the road here based on transactions and what gets presented to them, but I'm fine with the Wade signing.
More breaking news. The Lakers are in the process of trading D'Angelo Russell and Timothy Mozgov to the Nets for Brooke Lopez and the 27th pick Thursday. Wow. What say you?
Well, I think with Lonzo Ball, and I would be shocked if the Lakers don't select Lonzo Ball, so they're clearing more playing time and minutes for him. And, you know, Russell never really seemed to turn the corner in a couple of seasons there. So, of the Lakers' assets, I'm surprised that they got someone with Brooke Lopez's talent there. And mm-hmm. obviously he probably wasn't long term with the Nets, just because I would assume Brook Lopez would like to play in a playoff game again sometime. And so, obviously the Lakers haven't been near the playoffs the last few years, but I like that move. And
well, they got Mozgov's horrific contract off their books. I mean, it's insane. They got a good player of Lopez's caliber let's see here. The Lakers, they traded Russell and Mozgov. And not only that, they're getting Lopez and the 27th pick.
Right.
I mean, it's unbelievable. So, it's a great move for the Lakers. I'm just shocked. But that's some of the stupidity of the East. But there you go. Well, look for the Nets to suck once again. Wow. That's just unbelievable. All right, so next, we had some breaking news there. I know you got a hard stop in a few minutes. Why don't we close a little bit on Griffin, and maybe we could do a show potentially either before, just after the draft. I do want to get your opinion on Griffin leaving Cleveland.
Right. Well, obviously, Dan Gilbert's a restless owner, and we just talked moments ago about what I thought was a pretty crafty way to build a roster, given the limitations. And, you've got the, sizable contracts of LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love, and to be able to, and Tristan Thompson as well is getting paid too. So to be able to piece together a team that got to the finals once again, I think a lot of the credit goes to Griffin. So I'm not sure if there's certainly some rumors that LeBron after next season is going to move on, and I guess I'm not surprised in that with Dan Gilbert as the owner, maybe there is a little volatility there and restlessness, and anything less than the championship isn't satisfactory. But what Griffin has been able to do over the last few years to construct that roster around LeBron is, I think, what else could he have done?
Yeah, I agree, and I think this is kind of a sign that this is going to give LeBron an out. He's under contract with them for next season. But then he's a free agent again, and I keep on hearing rumors. He's a huge fan of Jerry West. He's a huge fan of Chris Paul. They're good friends. You could see him, Paul, maybe even Wade, reunited again in Los Angeles and under the Clipper logo in 2 years. What say you?
Well, that is starting to crystallize in my mind, right? There's probably things that are going on behind the scenes and arrangements and understandings that maybe Jerry West isn't going to the Clippers without some understanding of some moves like that could be coming. Right, that I don't think Jerry West would have come to the Clippers if he was in extreme doubt that they were going to be able to re-sign Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, right? Or there wasn't that Ballmer wasn't going to be willing to open up the checkbook to attract LeBron or other significant free agents. And then there is, I think, that competitive drive that West has to see if they can put a chink in Golden State's armor or be better than the Lakers in his, his basketball hometown, I guess you'd say, in L.A. So, there could very well be some backroom understandings and handshakes of things that may happen a year or two down the road that Jerry is banking on to make that move from Golden State to the Clippers.
Yep, sounds good. Sounds good. Do you have a few more minutes? You got to hit the ground running, or what say?
Yeah, I think we could go a couple more minutes.
Let's go a little bit NBA draft preview. You've heard all the. I'd like to get your take on the Celtics trade with the Sixers. I hear a lot of love for the Sixers, and I just laugh every time I hear it because, what have they done? They've had one winning season in the last 12 years, and this process has been they've been processing for basically 5 years. They win 28 games last year, and suddenly I'm supposed to be impressed with what they're doing. What say you?
Well, I agree. I haven't seen I want to see on-court results, and sure, there's been some glimpses when healthy that Embiid, has some talent. Ben Simmons didn't play a game. So the reason the Celtics must have made that move is they didn't really feel like there was a clear-cut guy at number one that's going to help them short-term. and they could get a player of equal value a couple spots lower, or and then of course they picked up another first for next year, which you would assume the Celtics, regardless of what happens with trades or development of whoever they pick early in the draft, if they keep that pick, that they're still going to be a good team and be a playoff team. So the fact that they're going to add Philly's pick for next year, right? I don't know who ultimately owns that pick. I think it's Philly's pick, which, again, even if miracles happen, Philly will be very, very lucky to even, you know, have a 500 record or make a playoff. So I credit Ainge for continuing to build assets. And I've spoken quite a bit about what a fan I am of Lonzo Ball, and I'm not quite sure why everyone's so enamored with Fultz. I don't think Fultz is a bad player. I'm not down on Fultz per se, but I just think guys like him come along pretty regularly, or like a Jason Tatum come along pretty regularly. A guy like De'Aaron Fox, Lonzo Ball, Malik Monk, Jonathan Isaac from Florida State, who's a long and athletic guy, Josh Jackson, those guys I think have more maybe star potential. Where I see a Fultz or a Jason Tatum, you know, maybe being a solid player but not an all-star level kind of player eventually. So that's my take of you know, watching these guys very closely. So, and again, Philly adding, you know, more young players to the mix, we've talked about it often and just on this podcast, it really needs to be a blend of young talent with veterans who have kind of been there, done that, and can mentor them, and veterans that can still play. And obviously Wade is a guy that falls into that category. So you see it all the time with teams with young players, and you know, a close game, they're playing a better team, you know, a San Antonio or, you know, any one of the, you know, elite teams or your top six or seven teams in the league, and those teams with the young guys just can't close out games. You know, they've got 5-point leads with 2 minutes to go, and inevitably they lose. And so I don't think Philly has the right mix of guys, and it's going to take a while for these young guys to develop. And I don't care how positive Brett Brown is as a coach, just those years of losing and getting beat down, just it's got to affect those guys. So so even if Philly moves up to number one, gets Fultz, I don't really see their record being significantly different next year than it was this year.
All right, I agree. And you got any other players that you really like outside of Ball? I know you're a big Ball fan. Anyone else that you really think is going to be a steal?
Well, I like De'Aaron Fox a lot, as I mentioned. Malik Monk from Kentucky is a scoring machine. I like Zach Collins from Gonzaga. It reminds me a lot of Pau Gasol, kind of a young Pau Gasol, so 7-footer. So I'm intrigued by him. You know, Dennis Smith, that's coming out of NC State, reminds me a lot of Damian Lillard. I think he's, you know, has that kind of talent. So we'll see how that goes. Another guy that I heard and read that his workouts have been fantastic, and his stock seems to be rising, is Luke Kennard from Duke. And I know even in some mock drafts, the Bulls, you know, were the spot where he was slotted. But you know, a 6'6" shooting guard, really incredible athlete. You know, I'm very familiar with him. He grew up in a town a little south of the town I grew up in, Ohio. So I've kind of tracked him through my brother-in-law back there, who's coached against him, and you know, knows the family. So I think he's a guy to keep an eye on as well. And you know, Duke just stockpiles so many good players, it's hard for some of these guys to stand out. But he had a really good season with Duke, if you saw it. And you know, really was kind of their go-to guy, even though they had Grayson Allen and Tatum and some others. That's another one I like. Yeah, those are a couple key ones I think could step in and play. Of course, there's not many college senior four-year players that are very high on the draft list, just the nature of how it goes. But and I've seen this guy also slotted on some mock drafts with the Bulls, but Justin Jackson from North Carolina.
Yeah.
Well, actually, and he only was... he still would have another year of college as well, but I guess, you know, 3 years in college is a lifetime compared to a lot of these guys. So, you know, looks like an athletic wing. I like that he tested the waters last year. went to the combine in Chicago, got some feedback, and went back to Carolina and worked on his game, improved his outside shot, and led his team to the NCAA championship. So I kind of like that story, and you know, it seems like, you know, a very fundamental player, and kind of one of those hybrid guys that can play a couple of positions that is so essential in today's NBA.
Tim, thanks for jumping on. I got hit the ground running. Let's definitely touch base this week. There's a lot, obviously, moving parts going on and a lot of news. I'm sure it's going to come fast and furious. So hopefully the next few days we'll jump on again and chat.
Sounds great, Fred. Okay.
All the best to you, brother.
Draft and talk soon.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.